Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. We're doing mailbag tomorrow, so you got 24 hours to drop us any of your voicemails, your text messages. You want to talk about the Jim Boylan extension? We're here to talk about that. We've already got a ton of reaction from that. So if you want to be a part of that conversation tomorrow, I'm sure it's going to be one of our more interesting mailbags to do. So hit us up at 331-979-1369. Matt's playoffs continue to be very, very interesting. The Rockets and the Warriors doing some interesting stuff, but we've got some Bulls news going on, so we're going to talk about that today. Start with the Chris Dunn article that Darnell teased late last week. But first, before we get to that, how you doing?
What up, Jordan? What up, Bulls Nation? Happy Tuesday. Looking forward to starting to get into more of our draft talk as we get closer to that lottery that's coming up. What is that, a week from today now? Yeah, week from today.
A week from today, we find out our fate.
Yeah, and before we get into the sad, depressing woes that is our current Bulls, wanted to say a quick happy anniversary. I don't know if you saw this, Jordan, but today is the 30th anniversary of MJ's historic shot. Game 5 in Cleveland, May 7th, 1989, over Craig Elo at the foul line, that followed with that iconic MJ jumping fist pump motion and the several fist pumps after coming back down to earth.
The inbounds pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it! They win it!
Damn, 30 years.
Probably one of the most iconic moments of his very illustrious career is that shot. He kind of had the shot part two in game 6 against Utah in 98, his final shot as a member of the Bulls, but that shot over Elo to win that not only that game but that series in that fifth and deciding game 5 on the road, no less, one of the greatest MJ moments. And on top of that, May 7th is an awesome day in NBA history. Today is also the 17th anniversary of, do you know what?
17th anniversary. So that'd be 2002?
A particular player who was at a podium and unhappy about a particular thing that people were grilling him for.
I'm lost. You got me stumped.
AI's rant about practice was May 7th, 2002.
It's easy to sum it up when you just talk about practice. We sitting here, I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice. I mean, listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice. Not the game that I go out there and die for and play every game like it's my last. Not the game. We're talking about practice, man. I mean, how silly is that, man? We're talking about practice. I know I'm supposed to be there. I know I'm supposed to lead by example. I know that. And I'm not shoving it aside, you know, like it don't mean anything. I know it's important. I do. I honestly do. But we talking about practice, man. What are we talking about? Practice?
Can I change
We're talking about practice, man. We're talking about practice. We're talking about practice. We ain't talking about the game. We're talking about practice, man. When you come in the arena and you see me play, you see me play, don't you?
Absolutely.
You see me give everything I got, right?
Absolutely.
But we're talking about practice right now.
But it's an issue that you're coaching. We're
talking about practice. Man, I hear you. It's funny to me, too. I mean, it's strange to me, too. But we're talking about practice, man. We're not even talking about the game, the actual game, when it matters. We're talking about practice.
Wow. I did not realize that. I did not realize that that was more of a playoff moment than anything else.
Talking about practice, man.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. I think about this, too, real quick before we get to the Chris Dunn stuff. Isn't it kind of crazy that MJ is one of his most significant shots and one of his most significant moments came almost a decade prior to all of the championships that he won and all the success that he had in the 90s. Like, to me, that makes him even more of a unique and, you know, one of the greatest in all of sports. I can't think of like a superstar legendary player that had one of his best moments prior to all the championships that they won or all the come up and all of his prime. Like, that to me, I think is just the craziest thing to think about. But 30 years, man.
Yeah, because I mean, you think about, everybody talks about LeBron and the fact that like before his game 6 in Boston, like, he got grilled for never really having those iconic playoff moments that define the best players in NBA history. Because when you think back about LeBron's most famous moments, you know, he had, like, the running, falling out of bounds buzzer beater in, I think, what was it, Game 3 against Toronto last year, as they were on their way to sweeping Toronto. But before that, it was his, like, miracle three-pointer at the buzzer against Orlando.
Right.
Which actually was not even a series that the Cavs won. Orlando went on to win that series and go to the finals, but that was like LeBron's most iconic moment, and that was still back in his first stint in Cleveland when he didn't have much of a supporting cast. But like that was like the shot that everybody knew from LeBron. His game 6 in Boston was like a complete dominating performance, you know, start to finish. But as far as like those iconic shots, the iconic moments, as you know, talking about when they happen well before a player actually goes on to be a championship winning player, to me, I've always thought about LeBron's shot against Orlando.
And unfortunately, I think about too, just more recently than anything, is Derrick Rose's game winner in the playoffs, and then LeBron turns around.
And then LeBron's buzzer beater in game 4. Yeah.
That was a wild series, man. But that was cool. That's cool. I'm glad you brought that up because for a lot of Bulls fans, 30 years, it's a long time since we've had a franchise-changing player, a superstar in here that's changed the fate of this team. So let's hope that we've got one on this roster.
But hey, at least Doug Collins is still around, right? Because just as famous as MJ's jump through the air and the fist pump is the shot of Doug Collins just arms raised, running around the stadium floor celebrating. You know, young Doug Collins with all the crazy curly hair flying everywhere.
Oh, my God.
And hey, 30 years later, Doug Collins found his way back to the Bulls as a senior advisor to John Paxson.
It's unbelievable. Speaking of players who have found themselves back in the Bulls' light, at least this offseason, Darnell teased this for us late last week when we talked to him. So if you didn't listen to that episode, I highly, highly suggest you do. Darnell is awesome, whether it's written form or coming on the podcast all season long. He's been great. So if you didn't listen to that episode, go back to late last week, Thursday's episode. We had Darnell on for almost an hour talking about all different things, including the Russell Westbrook stuff, too, which was great because he covered him there in Oklahoma City. So he talked to Chris Dunn, and the article was released today on The Athletic, and it's a Q&A with Chris Dunn, going over a couple different things, but I felt like the main theme of this was asking him kind of where he stands and what he feels like where his game stands at this point, and some of the things that have happened with the Bulls over the last 2 years, and maybe more specifically this season. Matt, let's just start with your overall feelings after you read that. I told you that I felt like there was a main theme in this article. What did you think overall reading that? Did it lead up to the expectations that Darnell teased? Is it the same thing that you kind of were thinking coming into it? What were your overall thoughts?
I think I would agree with your evaluation, which is it just seemed like there were a lot of excuses for the season that I think we all would agree across the board, and Chris Dunn would even admit himself, is a season in which he did not take a step forward in his development as a part of this young team, but actually regressed, which is not ideal, which is not what we were hoping for. You and I were both optimistic that we could see a more complete season from Chris Dunn that resembled and even went beyond what we saw when he was playing well for that middle stretch of last season, before that injury where he fell on his face after that dunk. So it's a disappointment, and I'm sure that no one is more disappointed than Chris Dunn is, but it's definitely still seemed to have this theme with every question, with every answer of, well, there were certain things that were out of my control, and a lot of it was about the other players on the team needing to be a heavier focus, taking a backseat to guys like Zach and Lowry and even Otto when he arrived via trade, and the coaching change and the styles in which that Chris Dunn was being asked to do different things. First by Fred Hoiberg saying, you're going to have the ball in your hands and then you're going to penetrate, you're going to drive, and you're going to kick out and find find looks for your guys. Then Jim taking over and slowing, really slowing things down dramatically, which kind of messed up, Chris's comfortability with what they were doing. And then when he sped things up again and went to that multi-ball handler system, which Chris mentioned several times in this Q&A, that to me it was like he was just kind of looking all over the place for different reasons other than putting it on himself that he had a bad year.
I think between that, just looking at that, that was my biggest thing, is the theme of, felt like there was a lot of excuses. And look, I don't blame Chris Dunn for a lot of this. And the one thing that I thought, like, I'm glad actually he didn't lean on, was the injury. Like, to me, I think a lot of us as Bulls fans, maybe I'm just speaking specifically for myself, but that was something I didn't want to hear anymore from John Paxson, right? We talked about how many of the injuries were used as like this crutch for this Bulls team. And Chris Dunn doesn't want to do that. He said, it's part of the game. I charge it to being a part of the NBA. That's just part of this game. So I was glad that he didn't use that one, but I did find it very curious. The one specific thing was saying that he felt like the Bulls had three different systems in a matter of a few months. And he said it was really difficult to try and figure out what they wanted to do, what the approach was. And talking specifically about Fred Hoiberg and what he wanted him to do, and then Jim Boylan coming in to slow things down. And then all of a sudden in February, they start speeding things up. So he felt like he was lost in the shuffle, and I can kind of feel for him. I understand. I totally get that. And it's difficult for NBA players to all of a sudden just wipe and switch what they're used to and what they're comfortable with and what they are used to working towards. So I found that very curious.
What's up, Bulls Nation? Matt here with a message from ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidate, so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the very first day. And right now, Locked On Bulls listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ LOCKEDON. ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Yeah, and, There is some truth to what Chris was saying there, talking about the way that the season was kind of broken up between Fred and then Jim taking over and making drastic changes, and then Jim kind of readjusting, which we heard was maybe even kind of Jim got a nudge in the right direction from Paxson and our pal Doug Collins, who we were just talking about, to say, all right, now that you've made your point and tried to eliminate some of these mistakes by playing much slower, feel free to open things up now. And that Chris didn't handle the balancing of all those kinds of things well, and that he never really got himself into a groove. But some of the other things that you heard him say in this Q&A, Darnell asked him about his three-point shooting because He took fewer threes this year, but he did hit them at a little bit of a higher rate than he did last season. This season, he shot 35.4% from downtown, which is about 3 points higher than his career average and a couple ticks higher than what he shot last year. But saying something like, I didn't get the chance this summer to really work on spot-up shooting because with Fred, he allowed me to handle the ball and make decisions. I'm sorry, like, how and why did that prevent Chris Dunn from working on his three-point shooting this offseason? Because I went into the last offseason saying, you know, I hope Chris Dunn works on a multitude of things. He needs to get better at the basket, finishing at the basket, drawing free throws when he's driving to the basket. But I also would really like him to work on his three-point shooting. So how is being a ball-dominant point guard in Fred's system, as Chris Dunn thought would be the case coming into the season, somehow prevent him from saying, you know what, I'm still not a very reliable threat behind the three-point line, and hoping that we will have a lot of time between me and Zach LaVine playing together, and there will be moments where Zach will be the one being ball dominant, and I should be a reliable spot-up shooter playing off the ball. I should probably work on that this summer. And he basically just admitted in this Q&A that he didn't.
From my perspective, at least, it sounds like he was doing this summer what they asked of him, right? Remember back to John Paxson's press conference last season, and he said, I want Chris Dunn to improve at finishing and drawing contact at the rim. That was something that he right. wasn't very good at. Like, he was all right
which
with it.
Which he also failed to do.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the stats,
his
he did improve.
His free throw attempts went down this year. His free throw attempts went down!
True. But his finishing at the rim went up. I mean, he was a 54.3% finisher at the rim last season and 58.5% this season. But the drawing the fouls, too, was a big problem. And I think, and he talked about that, you know? He talked about how how he feels like smaller players tend to flop around and draw fouls on him, and it's more difficult for him to do that. And you know what sparked that in my mind, Matt, is I remember specifically early on in the season, Zach LaVine was having a lot of trouble drawing fouls. You know, he was going to the rim tough and getting guys slapping him around, and he was flying all over the place, but he wasn't getting those calls. And then all of a sudden there was a switch, like maybe two-thirds into the season, where all of a sudden Zach LaVine started getting a ton of fouls. You know, we heard on the broadcast too, even him like screaming out and yelling and flying all over the place, and all of a sudden we see him start picking up some more calls. So maybe that is part of this, is that Chris Dunn needs to learn how to sell a drawn foul, right? And Zach LaVine even mentioned something like that back in December or January in an article. He's like, I've got to learn how to sell a foul call to referees. And sometimes they're not looking or they don't see it. So that, to me, I thought stuck out huge.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was funny to hear him admit in this Q&A with Darnell that essentially, as you were saying, bigger guard doesn't look like he gets hit as hard as some of the smaller guys who go flying. And Darnell said, so essentially you're saying you need to flop more. And Chris Dunn said, yes, that's what I've got to learn. And then he said, I played football, so you've really got to hit me for me to actually flop. So that's something I've got to learn, the tricks of the trade in the game. Look, I mean, some of the, like, whatever. Chris Dunn thinks that maybe he'll get better calls and he'll draw more free throws if he flops more. To me, you know, and it's something that you just alluded to a second ago, Jordan, when talking about Zach LaVine and the fact that he started to be able to get to the free throw line at a more consistent basis as the season moved on. And why is that? Not only because LaVine has what it takes to beat his defender off the dribble and draw a foul on a defender coming over to help from the weak side, or drawing a foul from the guy who's defending him one-on-one, but he proved over the first several months of the season that he is a dominant scorer in this game. And who gets the calls when they drive to the bucket? Stars. There's a reason that James Harden has been blowing the rest of the league out of the water when it comes to free throw attempts per game over the past couple of seasons. There's a reason that players like Kevin Durant get to the free throw line. There's a reason that over the past two seasons, and especially this season, Giannis Antetokounmpo can draw contact and get to the free throw line, because stars get calls. And I'm sorry, Chris Dunn can talk about maybe not like flopping. I hate the fact that they use the word flop, because that's not necessarily what it should be, but just maybe exaggerate a little bit when you want to make the ref know that, hey, I drew contact here and that should be a foul. But the baser reality is that Chris Dunn is not a star. Farthest thing from it. sadly. So if you are not a star, you can't expect to get star calls when you drive and draw contact. And that's something that even in the first couple months of this season, Zach LaVine was dealing with. But the league and the league's officials started to figure out that LaVine is a dominant offensive player who can score and deserves the fouls that he draws. Chris Dunn, not the same case.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And, you know, we were going to talk about that with Zach LaVine early on this past season. You know, we talked about how you've got to get to that star level in order to start getting some of those calls. And it's going to be frustrating. I totally remember November specifically, too, which was Zach LaVine's worst month. Like, that dude would get to the basket and just get absolutely hammered, and he would not get a call. And you could tell it was super frustrating for him. And it's kind of taking him out of his game. And then all of a sudden, you kind of fast forward, you look at the end of January, you look at February, when he was dominating more. You know, he was getting to the line, I think, 3, 4, 5 attempts more than he was previously in the first 2 months. So, but I agree with you on that. It's part of the game, and it's frustrating, and I think it can take guys out of their game. Maybe that's partly on Chris Dunn too. I'm looking specifically to it as some of the shots selection that he had this season. You know, from 3 to 10 feet, he dropped about 7% in field goal percentage, which isn't all that good considering last season he was knocking down more of those shots. It is nice to see that he has gone away from taking some of those mid-range shots that seemed like they weren't falling. But yeah, man, I mean, getting to the rim though, like going back to that main thing we were talking about is getting to the rim and not spot up shooting. I can understand that. Like, that's what they wanted him to do. Whether it was Fred or whether it was John Paxson saying, this is your goal for the summer, is learn how to create, get to the basket, be able to finish at a high rate at the basket, and everything else is kind of gravy. And then when Jim Boylan took over, he kind of felt like lost in the shuffle at least. And so for a guy that's not all that great of a jump shooter to ask him to all of a sudden turn it around and be a halfway decent jump shooter, I think his high expectations are unrealistic expectations for Chris Dunn. So I feel him there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the sad reality is that the most efficient part of Dunn's game and the part on the floor where he feels most comfortable shooting and scoring is the part of the game that has become, thanks to some simple analytics, the least efficient shot on a basketball court, the mid-range jumper.
True.
That's Dunn's bread and butter. And you even saw it this year in and around the times when his focus was, all right, let Zach LaVine be the ball handler, or I need to find a shot for Zach LaVine, or find a shot for Markkanen, or find a shot for Otto Porter Jr., or you know, try and get an entry pass to Wendell or Robin Lopez. Those moments where he would just kind of fool whoever was guarding him a little bit, create a little bit of space, and just flick up a quick little mid-range shot. And Chris Dunn can hit those pretty consistently. I mean, from 10 to 16 feet this season, he shot 44.8%. And that is the most reliable part of his game. And that's not a good thing.
It's true. We talked about that a lot with other guys, too. I mean, I specifically always think about DeMar DeRozan. That's been his most dominating part of his game, is his mid-range jumper. And with that being even less important now this year, and it continues to become less important, it's hard for those guys to all of a sudden thrive. They've got to change. And that's kind of what I was talking about with Chris Dunn and his attempts at three. I know that they're slightly down from where they were last year, and his percentage is up. But if he wants to stick around in this league, he's got to decide, like, either you got to lean all the way into your biggest strength, which is knocking down mid-range shots at a high clip, or you got to adapt and change and realize that getting to the basket at a high rate is good. But also, too, with that, sort of like Zach LaVine, too, it's either get to the basket or take an outside shot. So, and the problem is the biggest weakness is him taking the outside shot. Even some of the shots he was taking with the Bulls this year looked very slow. Guys, like, I remember specifically Philly. Remember when Philly, like, sagged off of him, like, 10 feet and was like, yeah, take that shot.
Yeah.
We'll let you take that shot all day from three.
It's like people sagging off of Ben Simmons behind the three-point line.
It really is.
Yeah.
So.
And until he proves he can do that, he did tick up his percentage a little bit from last season, as he and Darnell touched on in this interview. But his attempts went down, and he seemed to knock down a few more towards the end of the season before, you know, he got shut down for the rest of the season, but it's still not good enough. And I think that, you know, we'll see who the Bulls add at that position, but Chris Dunn knows, because John Paxson flatly said it. You know, we haven't given up on Chris Dunn, but you know, there's no beating around the bush. We know the point guard is a position we need to address. And ideally, that comes with someone who can knock down a three-pointer and make defenses stay honest more so than teams could just essentially ignore Dunn behind the three-point line last season.
What's weird to me is it sounds like he's having to prove himself a lot right now, and maybe in turn that's coming out to feel like it's more of excuses than anything else. But I mean, he isn't wrong on a lot of points that he was making, especially at the end of the article. You know, he said in his fourth season, I feel like I know who I am and I'm going to come out and be a problem. That's great, but we actually need to see that on the floor. But he is right. His turnovers are down. His three-point percentage is up. His assists are literally identical. The only thing that's down a little bit that's kind of unfortunate is his steals, his points, and his field goal percentage is right around the same place. So I don't know. Maybe our expectations for Chris Dunn are too high, and maybe that's where they were when we acquired him, and then all of a sudden now we're all feeling this way about him. But I don't know, man. To me, he's not a starter, but everything that I'm hearing from him in this article, I don't know if that's more of a pitch to other teams and saying, hey, this is what I can do, just in the off chance that the Bulls trade him this summer.
Yeah.
And hopefully this makes him more attractive, or this kind of also balances it out too if the Bulls don't trade him and he comes back into summer camp. So I think he did as much as he needed to do to save himself and not piss anybody off here in Chicago, and also in turn make himself more of an attractive piece for other teams that maybe possibly want to trade for him this summer.
Yeah, and Darnell did ask him, you know, he said, do you feel like your time has expired here and you might need a different situation? And Dunn's answer was, you never know. I only control what I can control. So I think he's aware that, especially depending on what happens between the draft and free agency, that the Bulls might be looking to ship him. And who knows, depending on how the lottery shakes out, they might even be, you know, putting him out there and offering him up in some trade calls on draft night. If they're trying to move up or something, Dunn might be a piece that they're offering. It's just a matter of, you know, how much he sweetens the pot, whatever the pot is that the Bulls are offering. But if the Bulls, God forbid, fall to a point in this lottery where they really want to try to move up for a guy and at least make some phone calls, I don't think Dunn as primary piece of an offer is going to be enough, especially considering that to move up in this draft, you're probably trying to move up to number two, because it would be very unlikely for any team to trade down out of one and pass up on the opportunity to take Zion. Say the Bulls really want to trade up to get Ja at two from six, seven, or eight. Dunn's not getting much done by himself. They'd have to include probably a future first round pick.
Yeah, I think if they want to get anything that's going to help them immediately or be a somewhat valuable asset, they're going to have to attach a pick to that. But we'll find out about that. Do you agree, before we kind of get off the Dunn topic, do you agree with what he was saying as far as comparing his first season in the NBA and playing alongside guys that don't really need people to create shots for them? And in the second year where they, you know, had a young Markkanen and they had Nico and they had Denzel Valentine playing legit starter roles. And he said, I felt like those guys needed a player to kind of create shots for them. And it was just a matter of they could knock those down or not. And that to me I started to think about the way Denzel Valentine played last year and why he was so successful. Is part of that too was he was part of that creation process. I felt like, I mean, you look at his assist numbers, they were way higher than we were accustomed to. So I wonder too, on top of that, if Denzel Valentine's going to have a problem with this system. Not a problem in the sense of he hates it or loves it, but he's going to have a difficult time adapting to what Boylan wants to do, because he's one of those guys too. He can knock down the three, but he needs somebody to create for him, create that three-pointer for him. But he also too is a guy that wants to create shots for others. So if Dunn's having a problem with that, you feel like Denzel Valentine might have a problem with that?
I mean, it's certainly possible, but I'm not concerning myself with Denzel Valentine having a problem with the way Jim Boylan operates. Until I see Denzel wearing a Bulls jersey on a floor during a game, I am not paying 2 cents of my mind to Denzel and worrying about how he will fit. because right now I have no reason to believe that he is going to be a useful piece because the dude hasn't played in a year. And I know that that might be a cynical way to look at a guy who, as you said, proved at times last season to be a valuable rotation piece. But right now, my expectations of Denzel are so freaking low, and mostly that is attached to the fact that the guy can't stay healthy and can't stay on the floor, that I'm not worried about that. But on the grander scale, some of that stuff, you know, you can think about, well, it depends on how Jim Boylan attacks next season, because we saw at times this past season, you know, laugh as you might, the fact that they started to stagger Chris Dunn and Archie Diacono as far as who was playing with which unit. And the fact that the Bulls were a more offensively competent and higher rated team with Archie playing as a part of that starting five unit when healthy of Markkanen, LaVine, Otto, and Rolo, than when Chris Dunn was a part of that group of five, and that Boylan used Dunn to be sort of a second unit, floor general. So if Dunn stays around and if Dunn is the backup point guard, at least Dunn will be familiar with that because they kind of started to do that already this year.
That makes sense. I'm looking at his game highs, Chris Dunn's. You know, even last year, like this past season, 26 points and 17 assists came in the game.
That was that Pacers game, right?
Correct. And the common theme that I'm finding over the three seasons that he's had is those really, really high assist numbers are coming also in complement with high point totals. So it seems like when he gets going and he's getting his own as far as the points and he's feeling confident there, he's willing and able to spread the ball way better. He's got more confidence spreading the ball. Like 17 assists this year was his game high, 14 last year, and 16 as a rookie. And all of those had higher than 15 points. So to me, maybe it's about getting Chris Dunn his looks too, but I think to me, he just kind of feels lost in the shuffle as far as when am I supposed to take a shot? How am I supposed to do that?
Yeah.
And when are those going to come? Because even in the article, he said, you know, in the fourth quarter, that's when I would try to get mine and be aggressive. It's like, well, why is he waiting till the fourth quarter to do that? Does he feel like he needs to do that? Is that the only time that he thinks he can get his shots, especially in games that are blowouts? Is it like, okay, Chris Dunn's going to go get his own
in
blowouts?
Over the better part of the past 2 years, most of these fourth quarters, the Bulls are down 20 anyway. So I'm going to save myself for the fourth quarter. Okay, well, the game was over midway through the third.
So any other thoughts on Chris Dunn, though, overall, thinking about this article, everything that we read? What do you expect this summer? What do you think he's going to work on this summer and try to, if, let's put the caveat on this, he's going to come back next year. Going into training camp, what do you want to see him improve on? What do you think he's going to improve on?
I mean, three-point shooting and finishing at the rim / getting to the free throw line. Like, that's, you know, those are the weaknesses of his game. And if he's going to stick around at least one more season and hopefully be a competent backup guard, you know he can be a really above-average defensive guard, especially if he's guarding, you know, our opponent's backup point guard on a nightly basis. But can he actually contribute on the offensive end in ways that are more suited to today's game? Because he's a solid mid-range player, but what we need him to be are the other two things that he's not.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd like to see the three-point percentage get better, and if he's coming back next year, sort of eliminate. Like, if we're going to lean all the way into what Boylan's doing, then what it is for Chris Dunn to be successful too, and I think it kind of mirrors Zach LaVine. Obviously, Zach LaVine is a way better three-point shooter and is way more athletic than Chris Dunn is, but still, in the same type of light, get to the rim, try to finish a lot there, and then it'll open up some stuff at three. And especially early on next season, look, teams are going to sag off Chris Dunn because they're going to think he's not a reliable three-point shooter. If they do that, I think it's going to open up a lot of things for him too, especially when he's in the game. If guys all of a sudden have to come and cover you at the three-point line, somebody's going to be open. Somebody's going to be cutting. Somebody's going to be open. And that's going to allow Chris Dunn to create a little bit more. So I think you're right. I think it all starts with that three-point shot. And Chris Dunn said that that's something he's going to improve on. He's going to try to improve on this season. So overall, though, I felt like there was a lot of things in this, too. And I don't want it to seem like I'm harping on him because I feel like I'm one of the few guys that still has his back and still think he can do something with this team. But some of the other things that I heard from him and read, I felt like we're good. You know, he said, I can only control things that I can control, which is good. He's not getting pissed off about other players and their playing time or anything like that. And sure, he's frustrated with how last season went. And that was coupled with injuries and a few other things, too, that kind of made this season very weird. But I want to see Chris Dunn capitalize on that one thing that we asked of Lauri Markkanen, too, back in January, is be more aggressive. These guys got to come out and be more aggressive. No more standing and waiting for your opportunity and doing it by yourself. Come out and dominate the way that they've been talking the last 2 years. And Lauri Markkanen did that in February, and we saw the results of that. So maybe Chris Dunn can take a little bit of a note from Lauri Markkanen and just go out and be aggressive 100% of the time. And I think good results will come from
that. Yeah, and he did mention that, you know, when talking to Darnell. He said, when I chose to be aggressive, I played at a high level. And that kind of goes back to what you were saying, where when Dunn had what looked in the box score to be good games, it was, you know, a good game across the board. Maybe not necessarily always efficient when it came to field goal percentage, but at least, a high point total and a high assist total while keeping his turnovers to a minimum. When he was aggressive, he was really aggressive. And Darnell asked him that really good follow-up question that was like, you know, are you turning into a guy who has a reputation of – I'm not aggressive enough. Sometimes I turn it on, I turn it off. How can you just be a person who's always aggressive? And you know, his follow-up answer once again pointed to having all these mouths to feed, whether it was his rookie year in Minnesota or his first 2 years in Chicago, like allowing the worrying about teammates and the system they were playing to dictate his level of aggressiveness where – You know, I get what he's trying to say. It does kind of sound like an excuse, but to me, you know, you said you still have some hope that Dunn can be a good player in this league and for our team here in Chicago. But if Dunn is not like, I don't want Dunn to be aggressive. I need to be the guy on the floor who's doing the most and has a higher usage percentage. Like, to me, I never wanted Chris Dunn to have a higher usage percentage than, say, Zach LaVine or Lauri Markkanen, and I still don't. So if that's what you're talking about when it comes to being aggressive, then maybe there's just a divide here that will not be bridged, because if Chris Dunn can only feel like a competent, good player who fits in this team system when he's being aggressive in a way that means everybody else has an off game, then I'm not trying to make that switch. I'm not trying to sacrifice the efficiency and production of other guys for Chris Dunn to feel good and feel like he's being aggressive enough.
Yeah, I don't think that aggressiveness all of a sudden needs to in turn come by scoring points or anything like that. I think aggressiveness just in the sense of, dude, if you're on a 3-on-2 fast break, don't feel like you have to give up the ball if you have a clear lane to the basket. Don't feel like you have to just continue to off put the ball somewhere else because other guys need to get their shots. Like, if you have a good shot, take the shot. If you see a dude open, don't go to the rim and try to beat three guys that are going to end up stuffing your shot. I think it's about making good decisions and also feeling confident in those good decisions, too. And I think in turn that turns on the aggressiveness. So I agree with you on that. I don't want to see the usage percentage go up and all of a sudden feel like he's got to get to the rim and be one of the main scorers on this team. I don't think that's the way that the Bulls will thrive. I think if Chris Dunn can create, but also knock down his shot when he's asked to do that. I think there was too much complacence with Chris Dunn's game this year, and it seemed like he was confused by the system, but also, too, trying to get his own shot and try to, I don't know, there's just a lot of different factors going into his game that I felt like it was just like almost he was lost in the shuffle this year. But I do agree with that. I don't want anything to all of a sudden to sacrifice and look like Chris Dunn just needs to take over games at 6 or 7 minute stretches. But I think confidence, it starts there, and then in turn, the aggressiveness will continue to come, so we'll see.
Let's hope so. Before we wrap up, my favorite part of this Q&A between Dunn and our pal Darnell was when he asked him, what did you learn about yourself this year? Did you catch that? Question, what did you learn about yourself this season? Dunn's answer, I'm a dog, regardless. Darnell, follow-up, you said that last season. Chris Dunn, exactly.
That's great.
Man, that's spot on.
So if it's something you said last season, how is it something you learned about yourself this season?
I mean, maybe he's just continuing to learn different aspects of being a dog, right?
You can always relearn or learn more about the same topic.
I did appreciate that. I got a good laugh on that.
He followed up with more eloquent thought about how he's, you know, it's all about overcoming adversity when it hits, and, you know, adapting and staying positive, staying in a positive frame of mind, even when you're not happy with the role that you're playing or the performance level that you're playing at. But it was just so funny to me that Darnell was like, wait, but you said that last year.
That's funny, man. I mean, if Chris Dunn comes back next year, I hope he has a full, healthy season. Like, knock on wood. And we can say that about, like, half this roster. But seriously, for Chris Dunn, two seasons in a row where consistency just hasn't happened. He hasn't gotten consistent playing time and consistent stretches of where all of a sudden that confidence and aggressiveness is built up. And then it's followed by an injury. And last year, specifically, the first year of the rebuild, I mean, some of those injuries were like, damn, those are fluke injuries. Can't really do anything about it. And then, of course, after his first game of the season, he hurts his knee and it's 6 weeks out. It's just, to me, I hope he has a fully healthy season. And I think we're being too hard on Chris Dunn as far as the Bulls fan base, but that's another topic for another day.
And yeah, it is. And it goes into what, you know, I think you and I have talked about before, which is that the expectation for him to be a starting point guard came from the fact that he was a part of the Jimmy trade.
True. That's very, very true. And I never forget that either.
You know, that the high expectation were there. He was a number five pick. He was a guy that the Bulls so highly valued, either, you know, perhaps incorrectly, if not correctly, but so highly valued that they basically almost just traded Jimmy for him straight up on draft night 2016, a year before they eventually got
him. That's true.
Fifth overall pick, and a guy that was one of the return pieces who, you know, Bulls fans said, we better get, if we're going to trade Jimmy and start over, we better get a damn good haul for it. And so if Dunn ends up disappointing, then I think that's why some people, as you said, maybe you feel like people are a little too hard on him. It's because the expectations for Dunn were high. And sometimes players don't meet their high expectations, and that's just the nature of the game.
True, and he was a four-year player in college, too, so it's not like the experience level isn't there either, too. 4 years at Providence. What's weird is his three-point percentage was up in his final two seasons, too, and a decent clip of three-point attempts in college. So I don't know why that's not translating or if he just went away from that as soon as he went to the NBA. So regardless, if he can become a good three-point shooter, then I think the conversation changes around him. Like, consistent three-point shooter, I think the conversation changes around him. So yeah, we'll see if he improves on that.
That and not having a stretch of, like, 15 games where he shoots six free throws.
That too. So those two biggest things, if he can improve on those coming into the training camp in September, man, I think we'll see a turnaround from Chris Dunn. That is if he is still a Chicago Bull by that time. So we'll find out. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up, 331-979-1369. I want you guys to be a part of this conversation, too. Whether you're listening to this, anything that you thought about listening to us talk about Chris Dunn, maybe you have some thoughts on Jim Boylan and the multi-year extension, too, that the Bulls gave him. Where do you kind of sit on both of those topics? We want to hear from you, so drop us a voicemail or a text message. We'll get to those. Tomorrow's episode is mailbag every single Wednesday, so tomorrow's episode should be very interesting. We've got a ton of reaction right now. So drop yours, 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Bulls, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Wherever you get your podcasts, I guarantee you we're there. Hit that subscribe button so you get our episodes as soon as they drop. For Matt Peckham, Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.